Ladies and gentlemen,
you deserve to be punished. Don't you, Mr. Potter?
It was foolish of you to come here tonight, Tom.
The Epic Film Guys Podcast. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to year 5 at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to talk about Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, the 5th film.
Harry Potter.
There he is. 5th film in the Harry Potter saga. I, of course, am Nick. I am your mid-level Potter lover. I love the films. I've never read the books. We're going to kick it over to my cohort, my partner in crime, our Potter newbie, Mr. Justin Escobel. Justin, how are you?
I'm great. How y'all doing out there? I am the newbie as far as the Potter films are concerned. As I've said on previous episodes, if you listened to those, I had watched the first few, and then I stopped watching them. So this is a brand new thing for me, so it's pretty exciting. Let's just hope that everything fares better after the last episode. But we have Fantastic Beasts 2 coming out this year, so we figured we would lead up to that with talking about every single film in the Harry Potter series. I'm super excited to be here. But I should stop talking because we have the Potter expert. We have the Potter lover. This guy's read the books. If you listened to the last episode, I'm sure he mentioned that about 15 times. We have the god of podcasting himself, self-proclaimed, mind you, Loy Sauce in the house.
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you again for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk Harry Potter with you all.
It,
as always,
this was constructed for really you. This is all about you because you're the Potter guy. You know,
I'm the Potter guy. I'm a fan. I love this series with every fiber of my being.
And this one's where it gets special for me.
Just
speaking for me,
David Yates
is now in the chair. He will stay in that chair all the way through the rest of the saga into Fantastic Beasts 1 and 2. So the franchise definitely starts to take on, like, you get those flourishes of the other directors and the different kind of storytelling directions that they were going in for the first 4 films. They are a little bit different. Cuarón's Prisoner of Azkaban, Mike Newell's Goblet of Fire, a little bit different from Chris Columbus's first 2 films. Now, the films start to feel a little bit more unified under Yates' eye. And I'll say it now, at the onset of this, Yates was born to direct Harry Potter movies.
Hard agree. Well, I guess I should talk a little bit about what the movie's about.
I mean, sure.
I would hope that you all are watching the movies along with us, but if not, I'll catch you up to speed. So this film kicks off in the summer before his 5th year at Hogwarts. Harry is attacked by forces controlled by an increasingly and seemingly corrupt Ministry of Magic. And when he returns to Hogwarts, he finds that the ministry is infiltrating the school by appointing Dolores Jane Umbridge as the new Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher. That's right. And very soon after, she's appointed the Hogwarts High Inquisitor as well. And not only that, but Harry begins experiencing vivid nightmares and visions of Lord Voldemort ever since he returned in the last film. And as a wizarding war threatens to break out, Voldemort is increasingly infiltrating Harry's mind and may even possess the talent to possess Harry, take over his mind completely, which is an interesting development that leads to great scenes between Harry and Professor Snape, who was kind of absent in the last film. He didn't do anything at all in Goblet of Fire, but Alan Rickman...
He was just kind of there.
Yeah, he returns to form in this movie, given great scenery to chew on. Ooh, but we'll get to that. So, yes, Nick, I agree with you that David Yates, it seems like he, you know, he was but the
I
perfect...
I had a question, though.
What's up?
I had a question. Do you not remember, Brian, do you not remember the experience that was The Legend of Tarzan? The same man made that movie, which is hard for me to believe.
Give Tarzan a magic wand. Give him a wand. Probably a different movie.
I'm just saying. I mean, literally, I
never watched that disaster.
Same...
You guys warned me off of it, so
it is a disaster for sure. That is completely accurate.
But maybe, like you just said, maybe that's what you were saying, Nick. You were saying David H. was born for Harry Potter and nothing else. So maybe he's the right man
that
for
may
just
be,
one
because
thing.
We're going to talk
just
for
one
the next
thing.
The first four spotlights. I will say, you know, point blank, Goblet of Fire is the low point in this franchise for me. From here forward, it takes off on a fucking rocket ship. It's not that I don't have some issues with the movies going forward from Goblet, but especially with Order of the Phoenix, I 1,000% love this movie. This is an incredible film.
Let's get this out of the way. This is one of the best films in the franchise.
Absolutely. 1,000%. Let's get right out in front of it, because I feel like we don't focus on him enough at times in these spotlights. I want to put him front and center today for this one. Daniel fucking Radcliffe. What a performance he gives in this film. Probably one of, if not my favorite performances that he gives as Harry Potter in this entire saga. He is spellbinding in this. He's got so much emotion flowing through him at all times. Some of it he verbalizes, some of it he internalizes, but you can still see it on his face the whole time. Radcliffe, he develops throughout these films into one hell of an actor. And this is one of the films where he really, really shows it.
The first thing that I said to Loisos when I sat down to watch this with him is I immediately noticed a difference with Daniel Radcliffe. He looks more mature. They dress him. They style him more mature. And his performance, you could just feel it. The way he moves is more mature. This is the Harry Potter that I felt that I was waiting for the past four films. Like, literally, I was getting frustrated to an extent where I'm like, this character has been through so much. I want to see him kind of more weathered and experienced, and we get a little more of that Harry Potter in this film.
Definitely, and not just the performance, but the character as well, because he finds himself having to be a leader because Professor Umbridge refuses to actually teach them magic. Harry takes it upon himself to be a leader to his fellow classmates, especially because there is a war burgeoning just on the horizon. So,
one thing, not to cut you off there, Lisa, but one thing I love that this film does is he was the only one in that graveyard that came back alive. Mm-hmm. I love that there's this doubt cast on him, and I love what that does to
Definitely.
Him character-wise, because nobody believes him that Voldemort has come back. We as the audience know, so we get to kind of like sit here and watch all these other characters that are doubting him the whole time. The Ministry of Magic, Fudge, and everybody, like, it's insane how much everybody doubts him, and they're casting doubt. They're trying to cast doubt on Dumbledore. Dumbledore's after Fudge's job. Like, I love the way that the Ministry of Magic starts to suddenly get woven into the tapestry of this saga. There's so much great stuff to talk about in this fucking movie. But
it's a complex movie, and that's the thing too. The book is the longest Harry Potter book, and this is one of the most, and I guess Justin had different opinions on this, but I think it's one of the better paced in terms of adaptation, because again, there's a difference between stripping all of the elements away to where it's just set piece after set piece after set piece, and there's no like rhyme or rhythm or flow to the proceedings. But here, I feel like we get a complete story, even though there's so much missing from the books, even though there's so much that's left out, I still feel like we as an audience are getting a complete film with a beginning, middle, and end, as opposed to lurching awkwardly from one thing to the next. Did you get that sense, Justin?
You're already calling me out. Give me a little bit time to explain myself while we kind of flesh things out. But the first thing I want to mention, of course, is we're going to start right from the beginning, is the opening of the film, which I actually really enjoyed. We've got Harry. He's sitting on a swing in a park. And of course, his cousin, we've seen grown up be an asshole. The kid's always been an asshole. He's an asshole here. This kid's a piece of shit.
You know why this movie's better than Goblet? Because the Dursleys returned.
Oh, I hope this is, again, this is the last movie I've watched that I know. So I haven't watched any of them after this point. I hope I don't see any more of those assholes. Because practically, you would never want to see them again. Harry's a strong enough character. He never needs to go back there again. I love
the Dursleys so much.
But we see some Dementors show up, and we get a pretty crazy, scary sequence. And I really enjoy that sequence. Of course, Harry saves his bitch ass fucking cousin. Sorry, I'm getting a little vulgar here, but seriously, this kid's a bitch. Look at him. He's wearing this gold chain around his neck. He thinks he's thug. Fuck him. Leave him for dead, that little bitch. But I really like the opening though.
Jesus.
And I love the visual aesthetic of the Dementors. Oh man, one of my favorite visuals out of this entire series. I love
the
Dementors.
They slimmed them way down in this one, and they changed the look a little bit. In Prisoner,
anorexic Dementors.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were anorexic to begin with, but the cloak kind of flowed a little bit more fully in Prisoner, whereas in Order, the cloak is like clinging to the bone, and I don't know. It's really interesting the way they changed the look. Which
maybe because
like.
They're desperate for. Maybe because they're more desperate. I don't know. Maybe it could be.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good thought. So Harry's kicked out of school for using magic, and he has to go on trial, which I kind of like that scene. I think that's really interesting how we get to see how the wizarding government works. We get a little
bit
of... It's
also one of the most visually impressive scenes of the entire film, in my
opinion. The set for the Ministry of Magic is unbelievable.
Amazing. Fantastic.
That's
set.
One of the best things that these films do. Now, we didn't even talk about it when we talked about Goblet, so there's no reason to really go back to it, but you don't really get that moment in Goblet, I don't feel, like where in 3 you get the night bus and you get all that kind of different stuff, and you get just kind of introduced to another layer of the wizarding world here, and this is the first time you really get a good chunk of the Ministry of Magic. Fudge plays a pretty important role in the story of the film, and Loisos, you just mentioned it, the set.
That's Stuart
incredible.
Craig, production designer.
There's that whole,
he's a genius.
There's that overhead shot that just kind of just dwells on it and spins. But I don't mean to cut you guys off. I did want to make sure we mention this because it's probably one of my favorite visuals of the entire film when they're all riding the broomsticks through London.
Yes.
Fuck yep. me, dude. I love that. It's so much energy. It's just beautifully done. It's not really an action sequence, but it's done so well that it got me all energized. Like, oh, this is fun. This is great.
When they remind us that, you know, even though they're constantly in, you know, Hogwarts and all these other different places and stuff like that that don't exist in the real world, when they're talking about, you know, being in the Muggle world and when they're actually doing things in the Muggle world, I love that when the films do that. And it's really, really nice to just see them, like Justin said, zooming around the London skyline. It's really, really nice.
Oh, it's so fun. It's like, and it's like, it's done so beautifully. I just had to make sure I mentioned that.
Yeah, and the music, changing composers, Nicholas Hooper, fantastic job. He did this one and Half-Blood Prince. So, great job on the music to energize that scene. Yeah, Justin, we definitely didn't want to do the review without mentioning that scene because it is great.
Yeah, it's amazing. To kind of go back, Loisos was talking about it before. Harry Potter has to go on trial, and who comes to his aid but Dumbledore?
That's right.
You know, to convince them that, you know, Harry was using the magic only in a life or death situation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And now, you mentioned in the previous spotlight how you were very displeased with Michael Gambon's performance as Dumbledore in that film. Uh-huh. Did you kind of turn back around in this film and come back around and love you some Dumbledore?
Yeah, I gotta know this.
No, absolutely. He's great here. He's perfect. And I can understand Dumbledore being a little bit distant in this film because that's exactly what he's doing. He's being distant on purpose.
And, he's trying to protect Harry, which makes perfect sense.
Right. But later on in the film, you get great Dumbledore moments. The scene where he evades escape, escapes from the people Phoenix. Who are trying to take. That's an amazing, amazing scene. I mean, I like his portrayal a lot.
We'll talk about it.
In this version.
Scene.
And again, Dumbledore in the next film, that's when he really shines.
Yeah.
When Michael Gambon, he nails it completely. And this one's kind of setting it back on that right track.
At the trial, we're
we see our first
we see
glimpse of
the first glimpse, and she's still wearing like the black cloak, so she's kind of blended in, but she's wearing that big giant pink brooch, so she still stands out a little bit. We get our first glimpse of Dolores Umbridge, and I love the way all throughout this film She is constantly wearing bright pink clothing, contrasted against Hogwarts. Looks a lot darker in this film. The colors are a lot more muted. You don't get that kind of vibrance, that sense of life, because it's kind of that sense of impending doom almost.
Definitely.
But she stands out like a sore thumb. And I'm going to say this from the get-go, absolutely one of my favorite Harry Potter characters. She's absolutely amazing. I have never, and I mean, well, not never, but very few times in my life have I wanted to be in a movie so I could just kick a motherfucker down some stairs like I do with Dolores fucking Umbridge. I hate that character, because that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to revile that character.
Yeah.
But she's so good. Imelda Staunton is the actress. She's so good in that role. That is why, at least one of the reasons why this film works as well as it does. She is an incredible antagonist. Just the way that she scoops sugar into her tea and stirs it. And then she's got all those creepy fucking pictures of all the cats and shit in her office. Her walls
like a thousand cat pictures.
Her cadence, every line she delivers, the way that she delivers every single line, just great. It's like twisting a fucking screw into your temples. I hate her so much, the character, but I love, love, love this character. She is a treasure.
Yeah.
She is. And you had mentioned a few moments ago how much she stands apart from all the environments at Hogwarts. And Loisos, I was going to ask you your opinion, because you've seen this film on numerous occasions. We watched it on the brand new Ultra 4K. What did you think of it? I felt like, dude, she was popping right up. The texture of the pink sweater and everything, like the little furs and everything, like she just immediately popped out of every single scene.
Definitely. And Nick is right with the muted colors. That's something that David Yates, I have a problem with, especially in the later films, where he definitely darkens the color palette and Half-Blood sucks
especially,
all.
Especially, I think, is Half-Blood, really victim
there's
of
There's a
that.
Lot of times where you can't even see what's going on. And we'll get to that. I've only seen them on DVD, so seeing them in Ultra 4K was just like, it's just like been the coolest experience ever. If there's anyone out there who owns a 4K TV, like, pick up this set, because my goodness, the you'll never see them look better.
I feel like this film especially, I mean, we've gone through all of these, but so far, this is probably the most impressed that I've, I mean, obviously the newer that, you know,
the newer
that
the
you
films
get,
yeah. Yeah.
If they're going to look better, probably quality-wise. Well, depending. The first two looked really good. But
first two were great. Another character that I wanted to mention, my personal favorite Harry Potter character, Luna Lovegood.
I love Luna Lovegood.
Luna Lovegood is my favorite Harry Potter character for a number of reasons. She's weird. She's an odd duck. But she doesn't give a shit if anyone makes fun of her or... Like, she's just in her own world, and she just does not care
first time
what anyone
her,
else has.
She's reading the book upside down on the cart.
Upside down. Yeah, it's, I mean, she's so charming.
Yeah.
The performance is, Ivana Lynch just nails it. And in the documentaries and the behind the scenes, when they're interviewing her about how she tried out for the part for Luna, like, she walked into the audition room, and she was just like, I am Luna Lovegood. So if you don't cast me, you know, that's your prerogative, you know, but I am Luna, and she knows it. Like she is that character exactly how I imagined her in the novels. And she becomes such a sweet, benevolent presence in Harry's life because again, Harry in this film,
he's a very angry character in this film. And I feel like what she brings
him.
To him.
Yeah.
She brings a nice balance to that, and she kind of brings a little bit of lightness because, and I want to mention this as well, you know, we can continue on Ivana Lynch in a moment here. You don't get quite as much Ron and Hermione in this film as you do in some of the prior films. They aren't really in the forefront. I mean, of course they're there, and of course they're, you know, helping Harry and everything, but this is very much Harry's movie. And I think that what Luna Lovegood does is she provides a kind of a nice bright counterpoint to Harry, because Harry goes to some dark places in this film and he's just consumed. He even says, there's a line in the film, he says, I'm just so angry all the time, you know? And
well, he just saw one of his friends, one of his classmates get murdered the year
previous. Nobody believes him. Voldemort's back and nobody believes him. You know, Dumbledore won't talk to him. He doesn't understand why. It's so perfect.
Yeah, and there's that beautiful scene where Harry is in the forest with the Thestrals, and the Thestrals are creatures.
Ah, like, that's what they're called. I loved those damn things.
Those like skeletal, like lizard horse creatures.
Lizard horse.
Yeah.
And you can only see them if you've seen death.
Right. And so there's the scene where Harry and Luna kind of connect because they both have lost loved ones and people that are special to them. And they've seen death in their lives and they both kind of connect. And it's this beautiful moment. And then at the ending where she just kind of sweetly takes his hand and just there's a sense of emotion there that was not at all in the last film.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what Luna brings to the film. I love her character. The portrayal again is flawless. I love her little like, her voice is just, she's just off somewhere else. And it's like, so
you had mentioned to me that she came into her audition and basically just said, I am this character. I had no idea as you were talking, I did a little research that she went up against 15,000 other girls that went in for that role, which is insane, but she is perfect for the role. I think because she's a new character and for me being a new viewer, she fit perfectly within this universe, but kind of stood out to me. And I was like, oh, she's more of an interesting, eccentric character. Everyone else just seems to kind of flow well within the realm of Hogwarts, but she is a standout to me. And I'm actually really interested to see more of that character.
Well, and here's, I want to move on and I want to talk about another standout character. And again, another one of my absolute favorite Harry Potter characters, Bellatrix motherfucking Lestrange, baby. Helena Bonham Carter, who literally has never seen a crazy character role that she didn't nail up fucking out of the park. But holy shit, is this character amazing. I love.
Please tell me, guys, that I'm going to see more of this character.
Oh yeah.
Because I was kind of disappointed. I'm not going to lie that it was teased. We got a little bit. Tasty morsel. Nope, take it away. That's all we're going to get.
You get that tasty morsel, but look at what she accomplishes in such a brief cinematic introduction. Completely.
That Azkaban break sequence is phenomenal.
Oh, that visual, man, when the open of the building's all. Oh, I'm not going to say anything.
She is, number one, very clearly unhinged as fuck.
Crazy, yeah.
And the way that Carter just, the cackle that character has. And she just kind of folds, like, especially with her eyes. She's a great actress in acting with her eyes. They're always, like, shooting out of her head wide. I love that character. She is spectacular. And Carter, like I said, in these kind of quirky character roles, she really nails it most of the time anyway. But here I feel like it's even more so. She's just incredible. Absolutely incredible.
And I didn't even know. Loy Sauce was mad at me. I'm sitting there. We're watching this movie and she shows up and I was like, oh my God, is that? And he's like, yes, it is. You didn't know she was in these movies? And I'm like, how the hell am I supposed to know? I've never watched them before. So that was a pleasant surprise. The ex Mrs. Tim Burton in a That's Harry right. Potter movie. So I'm,
and
she definitely fits this universe spot on.
Yeah. And I guess we'll jump right into this. Spoilers.
Don't you dare.
But
don't
she murders.
Dare.
She murders her cousin,
God,
Sirius Black.
Damn it.
And
all right, we have to get into this. Yes, please open this up, please, because this is a.
I'll let you finish your thought in just a moment, Loisas. But number one, I think in this film's almost sort of structurally similar to Goblet of Fire a little bit, in where you get all the Hogwarts stuff, you get all this different stuff that's happening with Umbridge and everything like that, and then you move on to the Ministry for kind of the climax of the film. And whereas that disconnect I don't think works as well in Goblet, I think it works wonderfully here. Like, there's still more story to tell, and it feels like there's still more story to tell here, but probably the entire final act of this film at the Ministry of Magic is probably, I would say, like top three Harry Potter for me. Like, it's amazing. Like,
action packed. Yeah,
it's action packed. The giant hallway with all the different memories and everything like that, and all the different prophecies and everything like that. I love that. And then of course the battle.
It's a great
between
visual when they start crashing down and all of the orbs are crashing around them and they're running. It's so cool,
dude.
It's so great.
It's so good. And then you get into the scene with you've got the Death Eaters, and then the Order of the Phoenix shows up and just magic battle. Dude, Brendan Gleeson, Mad-Eye Moody, fucking, I love the one dude is coming at him. He just bangs his staff on the ground and fucking knocks him.
Yeah, no, it's like, it's almost like it's shot like a gunfight almost. It's very exciting.
I love it. I
it's
love
like
the way that
it's like a magic shootout.
The little flourishes with the wands and everything that they get going on.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
You know, and then and then you get to that scene where, you know, she uses the killing curse, kills Sirius Black.
Yeah, even before that, there's a very poignant and it's almost a throwaway line, but it hits you like a ton of bricks when Harry and Sirius are dueling side by side and Harry knocks the other guy, the other Death Eater. And Sirius says, "Nice one, James."
Yeah, he calls him James.
And it's like, ooh, it's like, because like you can, because you get a sense before of Sirius and Harry's dad being such great friends at school. And I don't know. It's like he accidentally calls Harry by his father because he reminds him so much of his, his dad.
You know, another one of my most, in the whole battle sequence, I love him. One of my favorite Harry Potter characters also returns. Lucius motherfucking Malfoy, Jason Isaac, but he gets his ass handed to him, and I love
it.
I love it.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I gotta get into this. I gotta jump into this.
Go for it, Justin.
I don't mean to be a moaning myrtle or anything here, but I feel like this is the strongest that we ever see this character, but it's extremely frustrating from the standpoint knowing that I am not going to see any more of this character for the entire rest of the series.
Well,
I feel like the character was underutilized.
Say that, but
I'm saying it. I'm saying it because you told me that's the end. You told me that's the end.
The character's dead. Yes,
exactly. The character's dead. So to me, the relationship that I'm hoping to see more of.
Got
is
a
gone.
Cadaver. He's gone, man.
And I don't want to see him in a fucking fire again. I don't need to see his face and Gary Oldman's voice in a fire again. It's just frustrating for me because I feel like the character is introduced very strongly in Prisoner. And then in Goblet, he's glossed over.
Get one scene
non-existent. And then we get some fantastic scenes. Probably the best character scenes I've seen in these films between Gary Oldman and Daniel Radcliffe as their respective characters. And then you kill Sirius Black. And I understand. You know,
dude,
the motive
Radcliffe's
behind
reaction
that
to his death is one of my favorite moments in this entire
great,
series.
But to me, having Gary Oldman as Sirius Black in this franchise is almost wasted to me because I feel like you didn't do enough with him. It's frustrating for me because I'm like every single moment that I get with those two together is gold. But I only have a handful of things to go by.
I agree with that, Justin. I think one of the biggest
he's not even in the film that much, to be fair.
I think one of the biggest missed opportunities is not including Sirius as more of a player in Goblet of Fire. I mean, the way the relationship is depicted in the books between Harry and Sirius is a lot of it's like they're writing letters to each other. It's not even necessarily like they see each other a lot. And it's hard to convey that on screen. So I feel like maybe they could have written some scenes where, I don't know, because Sirius isn't hiding. He is a, you know, escaped
prisoner.
I get
that, but I mean, you cast Gary Oldman as this character, and he literally embodies it perfectly.
Well, the best part
about
it,
I feel that connection,
really, though,
and I love him. But
casting Gary Oldman in even a part like this, where it's not like the biggest part in the world, it still gives him a lot of meat to chew on in the scenes he's in, and
he's great.
He lends so much gravitas and so much credibility to the role that you feel it that much more when the character dies.
Well, that's why it's frustrating. That's why it's frustrating, because for me personally, I didn't feel it when he died. I didn't get enough of that character. I felt like their relationship was rushed even more in this one and kind of ham-fisted in, so I felt it. Okay, now we got to shove in all this relationship into this one movie because we didn't get it in the last one. So you're supposed to feel more of that death than I felt, and it didn't work for me.
I get it.
But I do love the scenes between him and Harry.
They're beautiful. They're amazing.
Yeah, but I agree. His character could have been better utilized throughout, as opposed to, okay, we know he dies in this one, so let's, you know, have all of his meaningful emotional scenes in this film.
Yeah. We move from there. Bellatrix Lestrange. So Helena Bonham Carter just, like, she gets that smirk on her face and she just starts cackling and running away, and then she's running through the ministry just like yelling, "I killed Sirius Black," and then laughing.
She's like, yeah, she's like giggling like childlike
holy
glee.
Fuck, I like that's like she gets very little screen time in this film as well, but my god, she makes absolutely the most of every single shred of it.
She has a presence though. I feel like she has more of a presence in my opinion,
which is great, which and again it's using those precious seconds of screen time that they get to sell that. But then, you know, we get Harry finally catches up to her, and then the big guy.
Voldemort.
Fucking.
So we see our basically our first like wizarding duel almost in this movie between Voldemort and Dumbledore.
That's what my dick's
crossing the streams like, again, man.
And what their wands are doing during that scene is what my dick is doing during that scene. Just like shooting out streams Nick, of light, man.
Is your dick doing that with my dick or Loisos's dick?
Yeah, when we're crossing, obviously.
All three just twisting together and wrapping them up. Like Loisos literally, I could not believe
it. Loisos isn't paying attention. He's reading the books.
That visual, dude, it was worth every moment of all the boring aspects of this movie.
I kind of love that we get that more so from Harry's perspective than anyone else's. Like, it's happening behind him, and we definitely get to see a lot of it. But it's still, the film very, very much entrenches itself in Harry's point of view.
Yes.
And so we don't see it outside of Harry's point of view, but it's still
I'm sorry to interrupt, Nick, but that's why maybe that's why Goblet of Fire feels so weird, is because a lot of it jumps around from character to character. Like, again, in that scene where it jumps back to like Hagrid talking to Madame Maxime, like, why are, like, we should be focusing on Harry. It's his story. Why are we here? And I feel like that's maybe why Order of the Phoenix succeeds in a way that Goblet of Fire does not, is that it is Harry's story. But yeah, that the duel is, again, the build up to it, the effects, like all of the different things. I bet they sat down and they thought, like, okay, what can you do with a wand? What can you do with the set that we've built? Like where Dumbledore takes the water out of the fountain and makes like a big ball, and Voldemort's trapped in the ball, and then Voldemort summoning all of the glass, he like breaks all of the glass, and the image of him like breaking all the glass and the glass shattering around him, and it's so cool. It's awesome.
Like I said, definitely top three Potter all time. Definitely top three scenes. But from the duel, not even from the duel, like I said, from the whole final act in, you know, the Department of Mysteries, and then you get into the actual, you know, Order of the Phoenix versus the Death Eaters, Voldemort versus fucking Dumbledore. And, you know, and then you finally get that sequence where after the duel, which is incredible, everything is so great. And then Harry, you know, finally, I think lets go of a lot of that anger that he's been harboring so long over the film, when he realizes that that's why he will succeed where Voldemort has not, because he has friends that he loves and because he has friends that love him. And then
and he tells Voldemort, I feel sorry for you.
I love that line. It's so amazing. Like, you see this amazing wizard, the amazing scene in Goblet, and then you see the great duel with him and Dumbledore. It's basically a standstill in the movie. And then you have Harry basically being like, I feel sorry for you. I love that line. And that's the moment that, like, really for me, Harry Potter becomes the Harry Potter for me, like in this saga, like, because he really, that's the kind of the first time when it's like, he can win this. Like, he can definitely stop Voldemort. He can definitely defeat him. And once again, it goes back to what we were talking about at the very beginning of this spotlight, but the performance of Daniel Radcliffe, again, I think and I haven't rewatched the rest of the films in the series yet, so it'd be tough for me to make that call right this minute, but I would have to say probably one of, if not my favorite Radcliffe performances in this entire saga. He's
definitely the strongest up until this point. Yeah. I mean, he stands out. Yeah. You immediately notice it within the first 15 to 20 minutes of the film again. And he's portraying the character that I was hoping for the past two films, as this experienced, weathered, he's going through shit in his head. He's dealing with it. He's a more adult character. And again, they dress him more adult, and they style him more adult, but his performance is really what stands out, I think, above anything else in this film for me.
Justin, did I hear you say that this movie was boring or had boring aspects?
There are extremely boring aspects in this film. Okay. There's not,
please elaborate.
There is not that one action sequence up until the end. The end is great. It is blue balls getting there. But there isn't that midway, you know, every other film has one sequence to get me through. Like, and even Goblet has the dragon. It has a bunch of action sequences. In this, I just felt like there's a little stuff, little things here speckled throughout, but there's not a great action set piece in this, in my opinion, other than the ending. Everything else is a lot of great character stuff, and I love the character stuff. But for me, I found myself twiddling my thumbs a little bit during that because it kind of gets a little bit old after a little while for me, because I've been watching these movies and almost every single one of them gives me something entertaining or energetic in the middle of the movie to keep me going in between all the character stuff. And this film just did not do that for me.
I want to jump in on that point, actually, because there's two things we haven't talked about really yet. The first of them being Dumbledore's army. And Loisos, you mentioned this earlier when we were talking about this, but Harry is very much thrust into a leadership role in this film, a little unwillingly almost, but he almost...
Hermione kind of guilts him into it.
Right. But
as all women guilt you into everything, great. I guess.
It's great because I love that they're using the Room of Requirement. And then for me, I know what Justin's talking about when he says he misses those big kind of action set pieces where it's something to keep him entertained and keep him excited and whatnot. But for me, the scenes in the Room of Requirement really, really do that. And they definitely create a really stark contrast because you also have Umbridge, who's seizing further control of Hogwarts, like day by day. And all the decrees, nailing the fucking decrees to the wall is so fucking funny every time it happens. I love it.
Great comedic relief. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. But I love the scenes in the Room of Requirement because not only are they furthering the development of the characters, but it's also the characters kind of standing up for themselves. And you get a little bit of that action, like Neville trying to learn how to disarm people is really, yeah, really great.
And you get to see everyone's Patronus too. Like Ron's Patronus is a dog, and Hermione's is an otter, and Luna's is a rabbit. So I don't know. That's kind of cool for me getting to see that.
That's
stuff
I really like, and it kind of helps me to bridge the gap throughout those sequences, so I don't really miss the big heavy duty action sequence. And
I like those sequences.
Yeah,
The fireworks scene is fine.
It's fine. I liked it. It's visually interesting to watch, and I think it is energetic. Well, of course, the colors on 4K. That literally popped off my screen. But I'm just saying, like, that's one of the only main criticisms I had of this film, other than the lack of Sirius Black, is that it didn't have that one thing to stand out for me, other than literally, like, the broom ride in London in the beginning, and then at the ending. Like, those were the two most visually entertaining things for me to watch as a viewer.
Yeah. Well, there's one more thing I wanted to mention before we get on. We got to get to ratings and trivia here still, but we mentioned him at the very beginning, and it's Severus Snape, Alan Rickman. He doesn't get shit to do in Goblet of Fire. He gets a hell of a lot more to do in this film, including we start to kind of get an idea, you know, who Snape was before all this. And this is kind of, I think, the first time that we really get that chink in the armor. Like, we've been watching for four or five films now, and Harry's kind of idolized his parents. They died protecting him and everything like that. But now we get to see a flashback where not only James, but also Sirius and... Is Pettigrew
Remus
there?
And
Remus, definitely.
Pettigrew's there. Yeah Pettigrew. They were all friends.
They're dicks, man. They're fucking dicks.
Yeah, they're bullies. They're bullies, yeah.
Yeah, they bullied the hell out of him. And I didn't even realize. Like, and I had a feeling about it that Snape had this bad past. But even Potter's dad, he was even a dick to him. So
that's
it was
why,
like,
he hates Harry so much.
Yeah, now I finally get it. And it's good to see that character actually get something to do in this, because I agree with both of you. And Goblet, he's kind of non-existent. And I actually asked you that while we were watching. Like, where is he? Like, he's such a strong
background of a couple
presence.
Shots.
Alan Rickman being put in the background of a few shots. God rest his goddamn soul. It's so great to watch him perform in these movies because he's so brilliant in them. But it was really good to get a little more backstory here. And one of my favorite elements of this movie is him grilling Harry Potter. He's so vicious.
The occultancy lessons are one of my favorite parts of this film as well.
I love that. He's so good. And their chemistry together is beautiful.
Even though he's hard on Harry, he is helping him.
He's doing it for the greater good, of course. But you see that he's cold in the front because of what's happened to him in the past. So you know why he is that way now. So he's not as spooky or scary as he used to be.
And I love that aspect of him, though, because it's, you know, every time that Harry brushes back against him, it's like the Dark Lord's not going to wait for you to rest. You know, he's not going to care if you're tired, or he's not going to wait for whatever. You have to be stronger. Like Snape, and especially Dumbledore, I think, realizes, like, the time is, like, they already should have been doing this, you know, before. So he kind of tells Snape, like, dude, you got to do this.
Yeah. And also, Snape kind of saves the day at the end because Harry tells him where Sirius is being held captive. He kind of says it. He gives him kind of a riddle so Umbridge won't.
So he can tease it out on his own without. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And then Snape pretends not to know what he's talking about. But at the end, he sends the order of the Phoenix to come to the rescue.
To come
at
the
and
end. Fight against the Death Eaters. Yeah.
Yeah, which is awesome. Like, Snape is a really interesting character because he's a hard ass and he's kind of mean and nasty towards Harry, but he is a hero in the end.
Yeah.
So I really like that about the character. And of course, like, we could talk about Alan Rickman even more, but we're going to be talking about Alan Rickman
a lot
in the next couple films.
More.
Let me tell you what.
Yeah, a lot more. Whew. So
that makes me excited. I'm happy to hear that, but yeah, let's get down to ratings.
I
want to
get down
guys.
To ratings,
let's
and I got to go last time, so I want to go first this time. This is probably maybe with Deathly Hallows 1 a close second. My favorite Harry Potter film. I adore this film, and it all goes back to number one, Radcliffe's performance, and two, Dolores Umbridge, who is the most deliciously evil character that has set foot on a fucking screen in forever.
Arguably more hateable than Voldemort.
Yeah, definitely. Because, like, literally, I've never wanted to be in a movie more to just straight up kick a bitch down a flight of stairs. Like, I just hate her so, so much. So I'm going to fucking slap a 10 out of 10 on this bad boy. I adore.
Wow.
I adore.
Damn. Wow.
This movie.
A perfect fucking rating.
I adore it.
Wow.
Adore it 100%. I love everything about it is great to me. Like, literally every little aspect. I think even fucking Malfoy. I love Malfoy in it. Like,
Nick, I'm going to start doing a crowdfunding. I'm going to do a Kickstarter so that we can raise funds to get this movie's cover of the DVD tattooed on your entire fucking back.
Bam.
10 out of 10.
Get, wow. No, get Nick's 10 out of 10, I fucking love this movie quote on the front of the DVD.
There you go. Somebody get in touch with Warner Brothers. But no, this is, I mean, like I said, to me, this is my favorite Harry Potter film. It has probably,
is it your
introduces
favorite?
Two of my absolute favorite Harry Potter characters, if not my favorite Harry Potter characters, with Umbridge, Bellatrix Lestrange, and like I said, I think this is easily one of Radcliffe's best performances, and everything else I think fires on 100% every single cylinder. And for to come off of Goblet, which is my least favorite film, right into this, into the stratosphere, baby. Yates,
huge impact, right?
Like I said, he was born to direct Harry Potter movies. There it is.
Just no Tarzan movies. Don't let him touch Tarzan.
Don't,
or any
yeah.
characters
stay away
live
from
in
the
jungle,
David Yates.
Or
stay away from
especially
the jungle.
Keep him away from Samuel L. Jackson. Just don't put Samuel L. Jackson into any of the Fantastic Beasts movies. Then they'll be good. Or Margot Robbie. We'll leave it alone for now.
So, all right. So,
Saucy, we got to know from you. We're going to go to you.
Oh.
Saucy.
All righty. Well, this is one of my favorites, absolutely, in the Harry Potter series. I don't know if I'm going to go a full 10 out of 10. I maybe, because I gave Chamber of Secrets a 10 out of 10, and there might be one other movie yet to come that I might give a 10 out of 10, maybe. But this gets a 9 out of 10 for me. As I said, I think this is a perfectly paced film. It's fun. It's emotional. It's action-packed. The end is action-packed. I agree with Justin. There's a little bit of a dry spell in the second act. But yeah, great characters. It introduces two of my favorite characters in the series, Umbridge and Luna. David Yates, I can't even explain exactly what it is that he does to make this movie, these movies so good. Like, he just, I don't know, has a very keen eye. Keen visual eye, because there's some amazing shots in this.
God, are
some,
there ever.
Some great cinematography and amazing sets. I think, yeah, this is easily one of the best. Easily, easily, easily.
100%. So there it is.
All right, guys.
Let's have it, baby.
Yeah, all right. So 7 out of 10.
Okay.
Wow. I think it's good. I think it's a good movie. It didn't knock my socks off. It didn't blow the hat off my head.
The end didn't blow your socks off.
I really loved the ending. Okay. I loved the ending. I loved the opening, but there's a lot of stuff in the middle there, though really well driven as far as character development is concerned. Great acting, great performances. There's a lot that left me like kind of just hanging. Like I wanted more of certain things. And maybe I'm being greedy because I don't know what's to come. You guys do. Lysos, so you've read the books, so you guys know a little bit more about this than I do. But I felt like, again, Sirius Black was underutilized. Gary Oldman was a little bit wasted in the movie. He's kind of shoved into this movie. We get a lot of him in spurts, and that's it. Then he's gone. So I do agree with that. And that's why I'm giving it a 7 out of 10. You guys can say this movie's the best thing in the world or anything. But, you know, for me, out of all the ones I've watched so far, this is probably the last one that I'll watch just to sit and watch to have fun with. I think I'd probably watch the first two just to sit back and have fun with over this one.
If no other lesson is ever learned from the Epic Film Guys podcast, it's that Justin agrees with himself. I love you.
I'm just saying, he was saying that he didn't agree with me. I'm saying I agree with myself because what matters to me is me. What matters to me is my opinion. It was just funny. I watched the movie. I only care what I think. I mean, I do care what you guys think. I love you guys, but I'm just saying, 7 out of 10 for me. It's a good movie.
There it is. We've got 3 more films to come in the Harry Potter franchise, and it's only going to get darker from here, gentlemen.
Should I read out the trivia question?
The war is coming. But before we get to the war, yes, Loisos, we're giving away how many Harry Potter films? How many of them?
Well, there's 8 Harry Potter films, and we're giving away all of them.
Whoa.
All of
That's
them.
That's crazy. That's nuts.
Every single one.
All of the Harry Potter films.
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter on 4K Ultra HD. Well, not the actual discs, but the digital code.
It's a great thing to have in your collection. We know that a lot of people are actually not buying physical discs, and if you can win this, it's better than spending the whatever $100 it costs to buy it.
So, now I can win it, right? You guys said I couldn't last time, but I can this time, right?
No, you don't even have a 4K TV. What are you going to do with it?
Fine. Loisos, this is your question.
The question for Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix for winning all 8 films on digital HD. Here's the question. So there are 136 educational decrees that Dolores Umbridge makes as Hogwarts High Inquisitor. Can you name at least 3 of them? Name at least 3.
Name all 100. You wouldn't be able to name all 136.
I was
going to
say, oh my God, I thought you were going to ask them to name all
of them.
They
definitely did not discuss anywhere near, didn't even discuss like a quarter of them in the film.
No. Okay, but, so can you name at least three of the 136? Okay. Doesn't have to be all 136. At least 3 of them.
Yep. So once again, head down to the show notes. The link to the Google document that you're going to need to submit those answers is going to be down there. You're going to be submitting your answers with our Goblet of Fire trivia because these episodes are releasing so close together. We wanted to give you guys plenty of time to answer the questions for both episodes 4 and 5 in this very, very special spotlight series. This has been so much fun already. Just reliving these films kind of one by one, even Goblet, God help me for whatever. But now, especially for me, once Yates arrives, man, I can't wait. Like, number one, because Justin, like, he had seen the first 4 before. You had never seen Phoenix, right? This was the first one that you had never seen before,
right?
No,
this is the first time I've seen Phoenix. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so he has never seen the other 3 films at all.
I'm so excited.
It's going to be so much fun to talk about these films just to hear Justin's perspective on them because Loisos and I are fanboying like fucking crazy. Like, our dicks are so hard right now because we know what's coming. We already know the great, amazing things that we're going to get to see. And it's kind of, we're jealous, I think, a little bit, maybe, that Justin gets to see him for the first time. And we, you know.
Well, you had said, man, and not to cut you off or anything or to keep this too long, but you had even sent me a thing saying that some AMCs are showing these theatrically again.
All of them. 2 per week leading up to. And of course, not my AMC, but there are a lot of AMCs playing literally 2 Harry Potter films a week. I think all through the month of September, 2 Harry Potter films a week. I would die to see these movies in the cinema. I only saw Deathly Hallows 1 and 2 in the theater. I never saw any of the others in the cinema. So for me to go back and see some of these films, like, dude, especially like Phoenix, I would die to see Phoenix on the big screen. Fucking die. Are you kidding me? Oh, God. You know what would be really interesting, Loisos, and not that I don't know when he would ever do it, but once we finish this whole thing, once all the spotlights are all said and done, and Justin has finished the whole 8 films in the Harry Potter cycle, would be to have him go back again, knowing what he knows at the end, and rewatching it all over again.
Yeah.
I would really love to hear that perspective from Justin as well.
Dude, literally, if I had like a full weekend where my wife and my kid were not here, no one was here, I could get up on Saturday morning early and just start watching these movies, just have like a Harry Potter house party and literally just focus in on every single, like watch them all back to back, like a full marathon, I would totally do it. And I think it would be beneficial to like actually, because I haven't had that opportunity yet, just drown myself into that world for that time period.
Can I come to your party dressed as Professor Trelawney?
If you're willing to drive all the way down here, anyone would be invited, but no one would ever show up, though. That's the problem.
All right. I'd show up, Justin.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's been amazing once again to spend a little bit of time in the wizarding world of Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
We've got so now I think, and the good thing I think Lori saw is we got Justin over the hump of Goblet. Now I think we've got a little bit more
home free now,
fire
yeah.
in him to finish the rest of the saga, even though he did rate Order of the Phoenix a criminally low 7 out of 10.
It's low.
Criminally low.
Hey.
But ladies and gentlemen.
And he rated Goblet higher than either of us, which I was shocked by.
Goddamn. But ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate you listening so, so much. Again, find us everywhere. You can find wonderful, great podcasts all over the internet. iTunes or Apple Podcasts. Spotify. Stitcher, Spreaker. Podbean. We're on the Mole Man Radio. We're literally everywhere. I don't know. Pod herpes.
We're up your ass, dude. We're up your ass.
We're up your ass. That's like the lisp. Deep and hard. But thank you very much, everybody out there, for listening. We love you. You guys are absolutely amazing. So for myself, for Justin, for the god of podcasting, ladies and gentlemen, the A1 Loy Sox.
Loy Sox.
That guy. Thank you all very, very much for listening, and
we will see you
at the movies.
Harry Potter.